Oh, hey there, champ. Didn't see you there. Oh, yeah. Come on, pull up. We're just grilling some burgers out back. Yeah, yeah, of course we got one for you. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Messed Up Midnight Podcast, the show that's like a hamburger, but with peanut butter on it. It's a little weird at first, but, you know, it grows on you. It grows on you. Hear us out. I'm your host for this episode, Michael Flaherty, and as always, I'm joined by the man who reposts Elon Musk thirst traps. It's Max Steele, everybody. Max, how are you doing, bud?
No. I want to make something clear. I do not repost Elon Musk thirst traps. I make Elon Musk thirst traps. You understand me?
You're like,
you're
making Dolly.
I want to make Rule 30. Rule 34, Elon Musk and Mark Zuckerberg.
You're making Dolly AI from ChatGPT work its magic. Get some hot Elon action with the Zuck. But
oh, y'all know how I like it.
Exactly. Ladies and gentlemen.
I get inspired from Mike, so.
Exactly, exactly. It's my DeviantArt page is filthy. But moving past our DeviantArt and Rule 34 expertise, ladies and gentlemen, we're at the end of the year for the Messed Up Midnight Podcast. You know, we've reached our second trip around the sun. This is our 2-year anniversary, and I would say we're older and wiser, but Max, how do you feel about this year? Do you feel anything?
I feel older. Mm-hmm. There's one thing I can say with certainty. It's that if there was a nuclear apocalypse and all life was wiped out from the face of the earth, the only things that would be left would be the wastelands, cockroaches, and this podcast. Fucking somehow. We powered through a lot this past year. And dude, now it's time we crack open the champagne, ibuprofen, and therapy bills as we reflect on whatever the fuck happened.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We've had the celebrity months. We've had the extravaganzas, the hangovers, and now it's time to sit down with our shrink and just figure out what the hell happened and just dig out the skeletons, you know, that we buried early on this year. And, you know, take a look at the skeletons we currently got from the past couple months before we, you know, put them to bed. And, you know, Max, I would say let's start off with how we started this podcast. But you know what? We already did that shit last year. And
they
the
fans know.
The story. We're not saving that mumbo jumbo gobbledygook for you. We're jumping in to this retrospective. And Max, I think that there's no better place for us to start than with the cocktails. Buddy, how were this year's cocktails? How were they this year?
I think the cocktails this year were a lot more consistent. There was like a lot of Pink Whitney in Barbie month and a lot of Campari on your end for like John Travolta month. But I think our cocktails, we've kind of like established our flow with them now. It's like we see a movie and it's like, it's this liquor. And then we just kind of have to think a little bit, okay, what else do we need to add to make this a complete experience, if you will?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I feel like we've really hit our stride in so many ways relating to the cocktails this year. I feel like this is where it finally became a science for us. It became an art that we really started to actually know what the hell we were doing, because it definitely felt like for a decent chunk of the first year, we were pulling stuff out of our ass. There were some times where we were just like, yes, this vapid horror cocktail, it's a gin, baby. Now hear me out. Whereas now we've got the liquor down and we're getting into more thematic cocktails, and we're really mm-hmm. able to ebb and flow in terms of like really nailing the overarching aspects for all these movies, you know?
And I don't think we've had like, we've kind of veered away from like the situation. We still have some like little situational based ones, but it's like, hey, play this music while you drink this. Whereas before it was like full on like short film about your your experience drinking this cocktail, where it's like you have to go outside, face east at a 30 degree angle on 1 foot, and you got to do like that whole like SpongeBob thing where you first you got to do this, then you got to do this. So we veered away from that, and now we're just like, okay, cocktail, here it is, getting a little bit more with that flavor thing.
Mm-hmm. We're you know, initially we were style over substance, but now we're substance and style. You know, it's the best of both worlds, as Miley Cyrus said. I really do like that we've managed to blend everything together. You know, just put in a little sprinkling of that situation with your cocktail. I really, really do think we've nailed it. And I really think this was
sometimes I was going to say, sometimes you just need like a little bit, a situation to really like bring it full circle. It's that little extra kick.
Yeah, now it's like the Shrek 4D experience. Sometimes you need that extra D to really bring it all home. I know you know a lot about extra D. And
I heard you say that. Oh, fuck you. Fuck.
Boom. Fuck. This is how it feels to be in the driver's seat.
You see, why do you think I love doing the hosting thing? I feel out of place here. I'm like, I'm not sure what to do with my hands.
Yeah, exactly. This is like if like David Letterman went on to Johnny Carson. He's kind of like, ooh, I'm not used to this. But
well, Mike, man, I want to flip the question over to you now. What was your favorite cocktail that you had this past year?
I think I had a few of these cocktails that I really think hit the nail on the head. There were some that I feel like genuinely landed on the themes really well. There are some that I feel like landed the overall vibe. And then there are some that thematically just hit the nail on the head. And I'm going to avoid talking too much about the cocktail I had for the thematic one, because I have a sneaking suspicion we're going to be talking about this movie a shit ton. So I'm going to say my two highlight cocktails are the Don't Open Till Christmas zombie brain that I did. Because from a creativity perspective, pulling out the zombie brain for Christmas, that was a real stretch. But bringing it all together with the creme de menthe and everything, I really feel like I nailed that one. The other one I really think that nailed the vibe was my Mortal Kombat sports cocktail, where it just had pre-workout and just creatine, and it just mud.
That's exactly that. That wasn't a drink. You made the Mortal Kombat sludge.
Exactly. And nothing really harkens to 1995 Mortal Kombat than sipping mud in your backyard, getting hammered ass drunk, listening to the Mortal Kombat theme song. That is just that energy right there. But Max, I need to know your highlights. What is the cocktail that you're hanging your hat on?
Okay, so for me, I picked a movie you and I saw together in the theaters that, in my opinion, I think was a real highlight of the year, because it was, you know, you were back in Atlanta. We went in the theaters. It was a small theater. It was a late night showing. And you and I went to go see Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the cocktail, if you remember, it was mulling spices, warm cider, some spiced rum. I got it pulled up here. And fill it about halfway full, and then you pour in, you fill it up with the rest with a Sam Adams Boston Lager, and then you add in, you know, some edible fake blood. And that was like my Thanksgiving experience. I feel like that kind of sums up the movie, you know, the setting, the killing as a whole.
I'm right there with you. I really do feel like the piece de resistance for that cocktail is absolutely the edible blood that you came up with, which definitely got some mileage on some later episodes. And also the mulling spices. I would not have thought in a million years to put mulling spices, like you're making a mulled wine of sorts. But, you know, it's genius. You thought outside of the box, and I'm putting definitely some some thought into making the Thanksgiving cocktail next time. That's a lie. I probably won't.
Well, we're going to have to find another Thanksgiving movie, even though I'm like Thanksgiving 3 is looking at us dead in the eye for this upcoming year.
It's, I'm telling you, there are not that many Thanksgiving movies. We're running out of room fast. So it's probably going to be Thanksgiving 3, truth be told.
Man, and I feel like we can't talk about the drinks and not mention Pink Whitney.
Oh,
the amount of Pink Whitney you and I used during Barbie month is absolutely ridiculous.
It's heinous. It's heinous. I'm going to tell you right now, it is heinous. Because, you know, when we did Texas Chainsaw Month, we did, you know, moonshine and like beer, which, you know, I feel like for us, it's very like, oh, you know, whatever. It's a spirit. And they're both very like middle of the road spirits that you can flavor in a thousand different ways. We took one look at Barbie and just went Pink Whitney, and we put that push pin right in the center of Barbie's face, and that's all we stuck to. And boy, by the end of that month, you and I just looking at each other and just trying to figure out how the fuck do we do something different with Pink Whitney. It was a sight to behold.
And you know, when I look back on our second year of doing this, I really think it was us getting in touch with our feminine side. Because you gotta think, we had all of the stuff, the just middle of the road 5 out of 10 Barbie movies, the nightmare straight to DVD CGI. And were there any highlights that you remember with Barbie month, Mike?
I just see of the actual Barbie movies, not particularly. It's, I mean, if you held a gun to my head, I could probably sit there and just be like, Fairy Secret was pretty bomb. but I'm also just like hearkening back to like us reviewing them and just us doing like the Coke fueled, like, I got no time to explain, and making Rush Limbaugh jokes, like, really stood out to me in a real, real sense.
Dude, we had some bits over like Barbie month. We were like, okay, let's just power through and just force our way through all of these just mediocre Barbie movies, with Princess and the Pauper being surprisingly decent.
Yes.
I will say that.
That actually was solid. I do think that of the movies that we watched, that has got to be on the notable gem end of the spectrum. Oh, yeah. That we both kind of walked in going like, all right, want that, whatever. But then we walked out, we both kind of went, I'm just like you. You're just like me.
You're just like me.
It's an earworm. It's a good one. I really applaud us for doing that. Now, since we're talking about some movies, and since we mentioned Princess and the Pauper as an unexpected gem, I want to also talk about some unexpected gem movies that I feel like we also walked in on expecting the worst, and we got the best. I'm gonna save my real home run statement, my real home run movie for last. I'm gonna start off with a recent one, Argo Man.
Yes.
Argo Man is amazing. I expected crap with Argo Man, and my God, Argo Man is hysterical.
Dude, I never thought that I would be able to like look at somebody and say, hey man, you really need to watch this movie. The costumes and fight scenes are insane. Like, that was never a thought that appeared that was in my head up until we sat down and watched Argo Man. And I'm like, what? And dude, the great thing about Argo Man 2 is that it was so close to just being completely forgettable. But as soon as Argo Man shows up, I'm like, movie just did a complete 180. I am
Exactly. I'm here for it. It's the movie completely puts you into a false sense of security. Because by the time Argo Man shows up, you are like, your eyes are falling shut, and you're kind of like, oh God, we're in the mediocrity now. And then a yellow morph suit shows up on screen with a visor and a man just pressing his temple like he's trying to knock himself out. You get transported. And that's what happened with us.
Dude, and it was great. Like, there are some movies we'll talk about that I have recommended to a lot of people. And Argo Man is on that list. And there are some other movies that I talk about that I talk about a lot because they're not good, but we'll get there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Mike, you said hidden, the word, what, hidden gem.
Mm-hmm.
Now, obviously I have to mention Never Back Down, because yes, that movie's just fucking great. Like, great. Look, hey,
love Never Back Down.
Straight to DVD, schlocky MMA goodness, but I'd already seen that one. I want to approach it from a different... What do you think about a different angle? A movie that I was expecting to be absolute crap, but was not as bad as I thought it was going to be.
Oh.
It might still be good. It's still bad, but it's not as bad as I was expecting it.
Oh.
And I have to think back to 1,000 Words, because that movie had a 0% with Eddie Murphy.
Yeah.
It had a 0% on Rotten Tomatoes, so I was expecting just the fucking worst. But after watching it, it was just one of those averagely, like, eh, I can forget about this one.
Mm-hmm.
And I also want to look at The Roommate, because you and I were like, as soon as we covered Bucky Larson, we were like, we need to cover The Roommate next.
Yeah.
And don't get me wrong, it's not good. But it ain't Bucky Larson bad.
See, exactly. I remember us brainstorming, and we both collectively went, The Roommate seems like Bucky Larson 2 Electric Boogaloo. Like, we should tread lightly with The Roommate. And we both went into it, like, literally clutching our pearls and, like, taking a drag from our last cigarette before we meet eternity. And then we both came out with, well, that actually wasn't that bad. It wasn't good, but, yeah, it was pretty forgettable. Like, that's shocking to me that people were hyping it up as if it's an affront to God when Bucky Larson exists.
Yeah, I don't get me wrong. I mean, we had like the accidental Cam Gigante double feature that, you know, with doing a Never Back Down and then The Roommate after.
That was
not planned.
That was not planned, and we stumbled onto Cam, and I was like, damn, buddy. Damn. Hey, what's going on? Hey, how we doing?
But another notable one I do want to mention is Microwave Massacre.
Oh, just God.
Just for the absurdity of it. Like, I was expecting a killer microwave, but I didn't get that. That was a little strange.
Yeah, I was absolutely expecting that too. But instead, what I got was two steps above a student film that was pulled out for like an hour and a half. And what was crazy about Microwave Massacre was the poster was so gnarly. Mm-hmm. I was like, this is going to be nuts. At the very least, there's going to be some good gore, because it is a fried head with melting skin getting pulled out of a microwave. And then I just got a portly guy just killing and eating women. And I was like, all right. Cool, I guess. But for creativity, it is in the upper echelon of the movies that we've watched. Much like my hidden home run movie gem, Zardoz.
Oh, I was waiting for it. I didn't want to mention.
We were
I was
dancing
like,
around it. Oh, my God.
I regularly, like, Zardoz is one of those movies I think about at least once a day.
It's like, our Roman Empire.
look, this is a movie that, like, I am scared to tell people about, because, like, if I tell my friends or family, I'm afraid they might, like, never talk to me again. It's like, okay, so hear me out. Sean Connery is in a Speedo, and he's riding on horseback, and he fucks a lot.
And he gets into a fight with a rock at the end. And you're like, I'm sorry, what? You're like, I'm not going to elaborate further. He fights a rock. And you're like, okay. Like, it's so, there's so much to Zardoz. And I feel like you and I, it's like if we're just mining for diamonds. And we were like, you know, digging, finding the diamond in the rough. But we actually fall into a fucking diamond cave. We're like, what the hell is this movie? Because there's so much shit involved with it. It's, the guy was like this Lord of the Rings director wannabe that just chose to just cram about 2.5 hours worth of stuff into like 90 minutes, which is unholy.
Dude, I need to go back and watch this movie with people who haven't seen it. Yes. I think that's the proper way you need to see this movie. And then just, it needs to spread like a virus, guys. We gotta get people talking about Zardoz nowadays.
This is my call to action. You need to grab your friends, sit them down, and go, we're fucking watching Zardoz. And before any of them can protest or go, is this movie that good? You just go, it is something that you need to watch. And then just turn it on. It's, oh my lord. I want to talk about Zardoz with people so regularly. But like you, Max, I fear judgment. So I just have to, you know, bite my tongue.
If this podcast gets enough downloads, I will play this at my next family's Thanksgiving.
you'll just pull out a projector and just go click, and then you just like as Gam Gam is eating her mashed potatoes, you just hear the penis is evil.
And then everyone just kind of like just looks up and is like, oh. I think that's when I like get asked to leave and never come back.
Exactly. They're like all of your like boomer relatives are just like, I wish you said a liberal take instead of showed me this. And you're like, oh, fair enough.
Well, no, because then after Zardoz, you show them Xanadu. That's like the perfect like 1-2. Well, okay. I think it needs to go Zardoz.
I would need a cigarette and a Advil after that duo.
Here's what I think it is. It's Zardoz, Argo Man, the Fantastic Superman, and then Xanadu.
Strap in, everybody. Strap in for the movie marathon of a lifetime.
And the most confusing thing out of that 3-movie marathon is Gene Kelly on roller skates.
Exactly. Gene Kelly on roller skates as a bunch of people in leotards are behind him chanting Xanadu and making X's with their hands. Oh, my dude, God.
Dude, yeah. It was a very confusing, a very strange, a very confusing, odd year, wouldn't you say, Mike?
I would agree. I really do think that we stumbled onto a gem genre that, you know, we otherwise would never have like delved into, which is the world of musical movies. I feel like,
oh yeah,
because Shock Treatment and Xanadu both were wild movies for different reasons entirely. Mm-hmm. Now I'm into the idea of watching garbage musicals, because man, if this is the peak, oh lord, or if this there, isn't
there's gotta
the peak,
be some bad ones,
there's gotta be some garbage, there's gotta be some slop.
I mean, I'm sure there are some like straight to DVD just poorly choreographed musicals at some DVD bargain bin in an abandoned Best Buy somewhere.
RIP, exactly. Physical
media Best Buy.
RIP Best Buy. They're not dead, but it's coming.
But Mike, you said something in the veins of a rabbit hole, and you and I accidentally, through a random passing by comment by my girlfriend, would lead us down the journey of Harden Scott and Tessa Young.
Oh.
We cannot talk about this past year without talking about After.
I think that... finish your thought.
I was going to say, and just the fucking wild and crazy... Because if you really think about it, that was the genesis of Barbie Month, too. Because we had another plan for October.
Absolutely. We did. We fully intended on doing Hellraiser. We were like, mm-hmm. You know what? Hellraiser's on the horizon, baby. And then after that, we both turned to each other and just went, let's just fucking keep this train going. Let's do Barbie. And then we just fell down the rabbit hole of romantic drama movies to movies for movies and for little girls, and then back up into just musicals that were just wildly over the top. We really did delve into the romantic movie genre. I feel concerningly adept at the world of romantic movies now. Like, I am, like, beforehand it was like I watched The Notebook and Four Christmases and that was it. But not anymore. Motherfucking Mike, more.
Listen, if you remember, we went out in public to go watch After everything because the stars aligned for us where we would do every After movie for 1 week until the release of After Everything. It's wild.
We saw After fan art in theaters. It was us and a whole bunch of middle-aged women and millennials and zoomers who were in on the joke. That was the spread.
Yeah, I think one of my favorite things though from that whole experience was when we watched, like, after we got done with our episode and while we were rolling, I let it slip to you that I had already watched every single After movie just because I was so fascinated by how bad. That was like my first real experience with like seeing a movie and being like absolutely enthralled by how bad it is. I was like, I need to know more.
I do applaud you for admitting that you did not give me a choice in the matter. Like, you didn't go, hey, so I did this thing and I think it'd be great. You literally cornered me, went, I did all of it, and so we're going to keep doing it. And it lines up perfectly. Don't you agree? And I'm like, oh, okay. Yep. We could have. Yeah, no, I didn't want to do anything else anyways.
Sure. You say all that and have a gun pointed to you under the table.
Yeah, exactly. So I was pointing a gun to my cat.
Like a lot of the people involved in the After movies. I can't remember if we made that joke there or not, but fuck it, we did.
I remember that was a running joke for a lot of, like, fucking season one of this podcast. So, I mean, truth be told, we delved into the wildly garbage world of After, learning all about how to not be... what not to do in a relationship. Essentially, yeah. How to be untoxic. And I think what we can take away is don't be... whatever Harden does, do the exact opposite of. Because, Jesus Christ, I am... It got to such a point where I was just like, Jesus Christ, this person should be locked up. Not because they're a danger to society, but it's because they're so unhinged and weird that I'm just like, they need to be somewhere else.
Well, the last bit I want to touch on with the romance movies, because again, we did a lot of them. The one I want to mention is the fact that we had our first guest on the podcast to join us by talking about Tiptoes.
Yes, yes. My old roommate Mitchell joined us on the podcast to discuss the hit dwarf romance movie starring Matthew McConaughey and Gary Oldman as a little person, and just the wonderful wild world of exploitation little people movies, which I didn't know existed. I'm going to be lay the cards out on the table until this.
But it's not like Santasploitation or any of like any of those other sploitation movies. It's just a little bit more offensive than that.
Yeah, exactly. I never thought you could like an exploitation movie would be considered something that's handling a topic sensitively. Mm-hmm. Until it's compared to Tiptoes, because oh my god, this movie just decided to make haha little person the fucking punching bag. They made Peter Dinklage have a French accent and be like a French anarchist motorcyclist, which is such a weird sentence.
Yeah, that was a movie I was very surprised. Like, people were okay with this movie. Like, this was a thing. This was Gary Oldman's "And in a Role of a Lifetime." Like,
yeah, exactly. I love that. I loved seeing that poster where it says Gary Oldman stars in the role of a lifetime. And I'm like, yeah, eat shit, Churchill. Go fuck yourself. We've and got little person Gary.
And I'm just sitting there just being like, in the role of a lifetime, huh? You guys have obviously never seen John Travolta in Gotti.
Oh, Lord. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. You know what? Before we jump into the world of John Travolta, I feel like the Travolta-thon, I feel like it only fits well that we sort of talk about the garbage movies this year and how I feel like the pinnacle garbage movie for this year, it's got to be Gotti. I mean, I know that we talked about Son of the Mask this year, which was, mm-hmm. ooh, that's intense.
That was like, I thought you would say that Son of the Mask, because I remember you said, like, listen, don't get me wrong, I hate Son of the Mask. That's the movie that made me not get straight A's ever again. But I'm really surprised that you're going with Gotti over Son of the Mask.
I feel like hindsight 2020, I feel like for me, Gotti is memorably garbage. Like, mm-hmm. I'm like, whoa, that was crap. Whereas, like, Son of the Mask is almost trauma response bad, which mm-hmm. I guess that does put it above Gotti, because that's how Bucky Larson is for me, which, again, didn't expect this to be an upper echelon of bad movie, but here we are. Yeah, yeah, you know what? You're making a fair argument. I'm going to say Son of the Mask was the pinnacle bad movie.
Yeah, I mean, like, dude, Son of the Mask, never got straight A's ever again. But it's like the visual effects were so, like, just bad. And there's something about a bad kids movie that really, like, kind of pisses you off. But with Gotti, that movie was just kind of boring and made some weird decisions. Well, now you see, I might be talking myself into saying that Gotti was the one of the worst movies. Or how about this? I present you with another movie that we covered this past year that made $9 in Phoenix, Arizona. United Passions.
Oh my god.
I would stand to say that I think United Passions is the biggest offender. Like, Son of the Mask, you can watch and laugh at. United Passions, you can't. It's boring. It's boring FIFA propaganda. That's all it is. And yeah, there's no, like, central character throughout. The central character is a fucking organization.
A notoriously hated organization at that. I do have to give you some credit there. Yeah, United Passions definitely is in a league of its own, in the sense that there is little to enjoy about it. It's there with Geely, I feel, where it's not like you can't look at it with visceral, like, shaking hate that you can with, like, Son of the Mask and Bucky Larson. And, like, it's not like garbage like Gotti is, where you're like, oh my God, this is laughably terrible. Not even in a good way. It's like bad, laughably terrible. This is just a snooze fest. And the fact that it's just stroking off Sepp Blatter, of all people, is just the turd on the poop cake, I feel. Like, it is just, it's just worse upon worse.
And it was just bad timing, too, because, like, Sepp Blatter was going through a controversy, like, when the movie was released. So that's just, like, a double fuck you for United Passions.
Absolutely. But still,
all three of those movies we just talked about, United Passions, Gotti, and Son of the Mask, all are so bad. But on the flip side, on the so bad it's good, we gotta mention The Fanatic, man.
Oh, baby.
The Fred Durst directed, John Travolta starring, horror-ish movie? Like, it's, in my mind, it is a modern-day quintessential bad movie classic.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's absolutely a classic. Like, it came out 5 years ago, and I'm telling you right now, it is a classic that you need to show your friends, a la Zardoz. But this time you can tell them, we gotta get drunk and just laugh at this. And, like, honest to God, this will help lead me into the Travolta-thon and my thoughts on the Travolta-thon as a whole.
Let's go.
Oh my God, The Fanatic was hysterical. And then going into Travolta's discography past Gotti and The Fanatic, jumping into the world of Propaganda, that is Battlefield Earth.
That
was a tough watch. That was a tough ass watch.
Yeah, because it, like, skewed my vision for a little bit with how many Dutch angles they were using.
My favorite thing is I saw a YouTuber talk about Battlefield Earth and, like, how nauseating it is, the amount of Dutch angles that they use. But
but we did see some good movies in Travolta's month.
True.
Yes. True. Battlefield Earth. I don't know if we're allowed to talk about that movie anymore because they might come after us.
It's... I didn't care for it, but the Church of Scientology can do what it may, and please don't hurt us. We just didn't like the movie.
I would never disappear or kill myself. But
absolutely, anyways. Absolutely, we're both in good mental spirits as of right now.
But talking about Travolta, we got started with a movie I had never seen until we watched it. Saturday Night Fever. And I feel like that's a prime example of watching a movie expecting one thing, and then you watch it and then you get sad, but, like, in a good way. You're like, oh, mm-hmm. I was not expecting this, but it's very good. It's very, very good.
I agree with you. I think that Saturday Night Fever, I'm almost impressed at how untainted my experience of Saturday Night Fever was, because all I was subjected to as a kid relating to Saturday Night Fever was its happy-go-lucky, like, relation to disco. That was it. There was jack shit else regarding, like, what people had to say about, like, Saturday Night Fever. And I'm so glad, because seeing the movie's tone shift so, like, black dark, like, was jarring, to say the least. And seeing just these characters just fall farther and farther and farther, I'm like, it was so shocking. Like, I got Requiem for a Dream flashbacks. I was so shocked with how dark it got. It was impressive.
And you're not expecting that when you see John Travolta just on the dance floor, just, yes, you know, boogieing the night away.
Exactly. I do really think that the Travolta-thon and Celebrity Movie Month as a whole gave at least me a much better 360 view of John Travolta as an actor. Mm-hmm. Like, that was, like, when Nick Cage, I feel like it was more just us just passionately gushing over Nick Cage and laughing at his movies. Whereas, I feel like Travolta thought, I genuinely learned a shitload about Travolta and was like, my God. And I do have to say, I do have to give credit where credit's due. Celebrity Movie Month and the Travolta-thon did give what I consider my most vomit-inducing cocktail. I do have to say that. Mm. I really do. With my gaudy cocktail being just like almost a tablespoon of cinnamon and a lemon. Like,
yeah, that's yours was like the straight up, like you were doing the cinnamon challenge, doing that internet throwback.
Exactly. It's just gagging on a tablespoon of wet cinnamon, chamoy, tahine, and a lemon, and some freaking Campari, which was nasty, hindsight 2020.
Yeah, and I think my cocktail for Gotti was like, instead of doing it, like I was going to do a martini because, oh, Travolta drinks a martini in that movie. But like I got one of those like giant martini glasses that can fit like 4 to 6 regular martinis, and you toss in like three shots of Burnett's. What else did I put in there? 3 shots of dry sherry. Oh, wait, what the fuck is this? Sorry, I got it pulled up right now. Make yourself a cup of coffee. Great Value Walmart. Well, instant coffee is better. Ooh, leave it out until it gets room temperature. That. Add that in and also add a sprinkle of coffee grounds. Take the cup you made and fill it up with water. And then throw in a shot of bitters for how this movie made me feel. And then garnish with sliced up mangoes.
I sliced mangoes. I do have to say. I really wanted to sit there and be like, at the beginning of this podcast, be like, ooh, Max, what was your grossest cocktail? But truthfully, I feel like it's just the cocktails that we did for Gotti were just so gross, just in different ways. Because, like, we could sit there and dance around and be like, ooh, Son of the Mask gave us a run for the... No. Gotti, just the Burnett's, the giant goblet of margarita martini or whatever, and then just... Just 4 shots, bitters, like, and coffee to top it all off. Ugh.
We have made some atrocious things. And that's one of the things about this podcast, too. It's made me very good at making bad cocktails. But then whenever we do a good movie, I'm like, oh, shit, now I actually have to try. What am I going to do?
Exactly. And I do have to say, since we're on the Gotti train, I have to really give... If John Travolta credit for one of the most dog ass terrible performances of this up a midnight cycle, his Gotti was just stank face. Just really just, oh my God, it rubbed me the wrong way. At a certain point, I was just like, for the love of God, John, stop. Well,
I think I have a worse one. I think I have a worse performance we did this past year.
Oh,
I'm going to say Hulk Hogan in Santa with Muscles.
Oh, my God. I completely forgot about the Hulkster. God.
Apart from Rocky III, name a good movie that Hulk Hogan has been in where he was the star.
Fair. I feel like Hulk Hogan and I, you know what, I'll throw in Goldberg because Santa's sleigh was not that good. They really did tank the reputation of actors in WWE because it took The Rock climbing with like, I don't know, oily hands out of the pit of garbage mediocrity to give like people like John Cena and Dave Bautista any running room of any kind.
And get out of like the straight to DVD market.
Yeah.
And I think Hulk I think Hulk Hogan's to blame. And also, I will always love our Santa with Muscles episode just for the amount of research I did into like learning about shit Hulk Hogan has said that is just objectively not true.
He just, the icing, the cherry on top for me was the fact that he said he like worked 400 days in a year, which just by every account is just fucking false.
You're like, that's I Hulk buddy.
Terry. Hulkster.
Hulkster.
Terry.
Terry Bollea.
Terry Bollea.
No. No. That's
yeah, I was like
no.
It's like I literally just like this is some it's not Carmelo Anthony who thinks the world is flat. I forget. Kyrie Irving. Yeah. I was like, how fucking stupid are you?
Well, man, were there any other notable performances of this past year that you want to mention?
The only performances that I think I'm going to mention is just performances that have fallen now into what I like to call harbingers. Mm. And for those who have not been diligently keeping up with the podcast, first off, go download a couple and get up to speed. Second off, I've been referring to characters as harbingers in the sense that if you could see an actor on screen and almost instantaneously go, oh shit, this is going to be bad. Some notable examples are, you know, Jamie Kennedy in Son of the Mask. He is now a harbinger in my head because vile performance, and I don't think he knows how to pick them, because we all have our low points. You know, Alan Cummings was also in this movie, and Alan Cummings is a great actor. Mm-hmm. I've looked through Jamie Kennedy's portfolio, Max. I don't think he's got it in him. Some other notable harbingers we've listed in the past are John Voight. John Voight is a notable harbinger. Nick Swartzen is probably the key harbinger, though. I feel like for all time, he is the harbinger.
Whenever we see Nick Swartzen, like, remember when he went viral like a few weeks ago because he like was too high to perform a stand-up comedy set?
Yeah, he said he ate an edible and got too high to perform at Red Rocks in Colorado, which I have watched many a stand-up special. More than a few times, I've had the sneaking suspicion that the person on stage is fucking zonked, like just roasted. And I'll tell you this right now, Max, they've been okay. They've been okay. They've been largely okay. I think he's kind of just going whoopsie daisy, which is more anger inducing, dare I say.
Yeah, well, dude, I want to also mention some other highlights that I had this past year. And a movie we haven't mentioned yet, The Dragon Lives Again.
I'm so glad you mentioned it.
Dude,
I'm so
glad. If you guys want a funny time, go take like three shots and go watch The Dragon Lives Again, where you're going to see Bruce Lee, not the Bruce Lee the man, fight Clint Eastwood the man in the underworld, and then Popeye randomly appearing. Like, I love this movie. I really do. I think The Dragon Lives Again. More people need to know about this movie. Hell, loop it in with our fucking Zardoz Xanadu, The Dragon Lives Again. Why not?
Zardoz Xanadu, Dragon Lives Again. Oh my god. You're gonna be confused, laughing, and shithoused. I absolutely agree with you on Dragon Lives Again. That is such a staple movie. It is so funny. It's every character just feels like they're totally in on the joke, and no one is trying too hard one way or the other, which is why like I definitely give a special shout out to like the guy who plays Bruce Lee, as well as the guy who plays like Popeye and like Clint Eastwood and the Emperor in the movie, because all the characters just feel very self-aware, for better and worse. I mean, I'm not saying they like are transformative, but they definitely were standouts in so many ways.
And another movie I wanted to mention, you might have mentioned it, but Don't Open Till Christmas. I have been thinking about this movie a lot. In fact, I have even toyed with the idea of writing a script based off of Don't Open Till Christmas. You know, it may only share the title, but you know, what are you going to do? I don't know if the movie's in public domain or not.
I absolutely am right there with you. Don't Open Till Christmas is, I don't know if I'd put it in our gems category, but I will say if it's not in the gems category, it's fucking right up against the line. It's like sniffing the line. It is so close. It's so hysterically weird. And the ending is one of the greatest endings I have watched in years. Not a year, years.
Dude, I remember when I was watching that ending and the ending happens. And like, I'm just watching, you know, my girlfriend's upstairs and I'm watching it. And then she just hears me scream, "Holy shit!"
Exactly.
And she was like, "Are you okay?" And I'm like, "You're not going to believe what just happened."
I like literally died laughing. I was laughing so loud. Like, I'm surprised I didn't get a complaint. It's so funny and so unhinged. Oh my God.
Well, Mike, man, was there any other movies that you wanted to mention? And maybe we can give the audience a little tease as to what's coming.
So I think the last thing I'm going to mention, just because, you know, I feel like this whole podcast's crux is bad movies and trying to find the gems within these bad movies. I feel like it's only fair that we briefly mention the good stuff that we did. And we don't need to harp on it, but just sitting there hitting the nail on the head, giving a special shout out. And I'll start this whole segment with just giving a special shout out to just us doing Fallen Angels and breaking into that world of Wong Kar-wai, and just a movie that is beautiful and sad and romantic at the all and lonely all at the exact same time. Definitely, I think it has stood out in my mind, like, as a movie for the ages, like it way more than I ever expected, like, a movie would be, especially within this podcast.
It's a movie that makes you like feel something.
Exactly.
It's endlessly rewatchable. I was so glad that you showed it to me, because definitely go check out Fallen Angels.
Yeah, absolutely. But that's, I think, past that, I mean, I'm trying to think, like, Tropic Thunder, hysterical.
Tropic Thunder, The Raid-a-thon. The Raid 2, definitely. Check out The Raid 2, because you want to talk about, like, a, you know, underground crime movie. That, you know, you're getting something different, you know, between The Raid and The Raid 2. So go check out both of them. Platoon.
Rambo.
Dude, First Blood.
First Blood. I genuinely, and granted, I'm so, again, listeners, I absolutely feel like I'm part of the majority who just sees Rambo as just like dumb muscle shooting. Freaking watch First Blood. Watch First Blood. Oh my God. Watch First Blood. It's so beautiful. It's so good. It's got your dumb 80s action, but it has got such heart to it that I really just think is so worthy of applause.
Yeah, dude. Absolutely.
We cover
good movies on this podcast.
We cover good stuff. Exactly. It's not all turds in here. It's we get the occasional good thing. But let's move on. What do we have in the pipeline for this coming year?
So I'm going to go ahead and say it. We've been talking the Halloween double feature extravaganza. As of right now, we're still planning to do that. Should we tell them what we're going to do, or make it a surprise? We've kind of I think we mentioned it earlier, but
yeah. We've mentioned it so many times. I think we mentioned it the first time we did the double feature extravaganza. Like, mm-hmm. I think it's no secret. So yeah. Why don't you just let them know,
guys? This October, we're gonna be talking all things Hellraiser. Mm-hmm. I've seen every Hellraiser movie, so I know what's coming, and I'm really looking forward to taking Mike down the rabbit hole and see what the fuck happened to this wonderfully weird, strange franchise.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm super looking forward to it. Hellraiser, I've seen the first one. I've seen Hellraiser Hellbound 2. Mm-hmm. The most recent one that was released on Hulu mm-hmm. has definitely been in my watch list for God knows how long. So I'm looking forward to this properly.
Mm-hmm. And we've also talked about doing Celebrity Month again. We haven't figured yes. out who yet, but we have. Mike, do you have any ideas of who you want to see on Celebrity Month this year?
So I feel like we've covered two titans in their world. And I feel like I feel like moving over into a different, like, world, you know, maybe not the dramas, maybe not the out there craziness. I feel like diving into niches, I feel Ooh. Like would be a little more interesting. Maybe someone who's known as a one trick pony, like someone who we could always do Adam Sandler. I feel like that's an easy tee up, but we could also do someone like, I don't know, like Tara Reid. Like, yeah. I mean, she was famous in the American Pie series for a reason, and seeing the movie she's recently released, Past Sharknado, is surprising. So, I mean, there are a whole host of people we can cover. Yeah.
I mean, I'm always leaning towards like a Tyler Perry or a good one, or you know, we mentioned this like when we did Nick Cage, Steven Seagal. Like, yes. I feel like Steven Seagal is like always gonna be, that's always gonna be something I mention until we do it. So Celebrity Month, that is coming back, and also this year we're gonna be trying something a little bit different. We've seen a lot of bad movies. Sometimes we need a bit of a break, and we're gonna be having these breaks in the form of these discussion episodes. We're not gonna be covering like a movie. We'll be picking just kind of a movie related thing and talking about it. Mike, do you want to give any details?
Oh yeah, absolutely. So we've made jokes about this many times on the podcast, but you know, we both joked about how we feel like we've gotten a masterclass in filmmaking based off of what you absolutely should not do. And you know what? We're finally going to put our money where our mouth is. We'll be diving through a whole bunch of stuff, just a whole bunch of aspects of filmmaking. Who did it? Who did what well? Who really did not do it well? What we feel like is good, you know, storytelling, what's good cinematography, like what movies really like hit the nail on the head for VFX, all of this good stuff.
Ultimately, what it boils down to is we've seen a lot of bad movies, like well over 100. What have we learned? And that's what we're going to be talking about.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, man, cheers to 2 years, and cheers to like 2, 3, 4, however many more until the world wipes out and it's just our two husks recording into rocks.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We're going to be like, it's going to be two aluminum cans and some string. That's what it's going to be. It's going to be great.
All right, everyone. Well, thank you again so much for tuning in to this wonderful, just the Messed Up at Midnight podcast in general, guys. Thank you so much for tuning in. Go follow us, Instagram, Twitter, YouTube. You guys know the deal. Stay up to date with what we got going on. Mike, I'm going to throw it over to you. Do you have anything else you want to tell the people?
Thanks for listening. It's super fun. We like doing this, and you know, we're going to keep doing it. Come hell or high water. This is fun, and God damn it, we're glad you're here with us.
Someone's out there listening to us, and you know, if we have at least someone doing it, that's all that really matters.
God damn right. God damn right.
All right, guys, we'll see y'all next week.
See you next week, everybody.